A long-running joke about SDN is that it stands for Still Does Nothing, and taken by itself, that's kind of true. Software-defined networking shouldn't be thought of as something you buy for its own self. SDN is better thought of as a toolbox with a number of useful tools inside, and for that toolbox to be useful, you need to know how to use those tools, and if you aren't the one who knows how to build whatever it is you need, you will outsource your building project to a master craftsman. VeloCloud, our sponsor for today's Packet Pushers Weekly Show, knows how to use the SDN toolbox. They have crafted a software-defined WAN product that improves your WAN ownership experience, whether you are an enterprise or a service provider. I am Ethan Banks, and with me is Greg Farrell. On our show today, we are going to talk about the VeloCloud SD-WAN product with Steve Wu and Parag Thakur. So let's have these gentlemen introduce themselves, starting with Steve. Would you introduce yourself to the Packet Pushers audience?
Sure. Thanks, Ethan. Thanks, Greg. My name is Steve Wu, co-founder of VeloCloud Networks, and also it's vice president of products.
And this is Parag Thakur, Director of Product Management, VeloCloud Networks. Thanks for having us on the show.
Oh, thanks a lot for sponsoring and coming on today, gentlemen. Steve, let's start with you. Now, we've talked a lot about SD-WAN on Packet Pushers before, so why don't you level set for the audience? Can you describe at a high level what the VeloCloud product is?
So the VeloCloud solution is targeted to address three of the critical problems that the enterprise WAN is suffering. So the more common ones are the application rollouts are inhibited by expensive bandwidth. I just can't get the amount of bandwidth at the office that, in fact, you even have at home. And additionally, the branch deployments are very complex. So both setting up the devices in the branch, provisioning the private circuits. But really, there's a third challenge, which is very important that I think we uniquely address. And that is that the compute is actually migrating to the cloud, right? So basically, and this is not supported by traditional private network architectures. So basically, VeloCloud has a very unique solution, which we called a cloud-delivered SD-WAN. And this is architected to specifically address the shift of applications to a hybrid cloud model. So basically, we want to support both the traditional on-premise applications as well as applications in the cloud and cloud data centers. And to do this, we have an on-premise as well as a cloud footprint. So for our SD-WAN solution, you get the same enterprise-grade overlay to both types of destinations.
So this is really interesting, right? Because not all of the SD-WAN providers are working in this, and this is a unique differentiator. So if I could just go with this, Steve, and just try and highlight how VeloCloud is a little bit different. So the normal business WAN is you have a branch office, you have a dedicated private circuit coming back to the data center where you have your WAN head end is, right?
Correct.
So with an SD-WAN environment, normally what you would do is add a SD-WAN appliance to those existing circuits and then start to use multiple circuits or the internet bandwidth as a way of having multiple paths between the branch and the data center in the sense that you're replacing the WAN. Now, VeloCloud does that too, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. So that's one key benefit you need from SD-WAN. In fact, traditional approach, as you just mentioned, is to provide these SD-WAN appliances to be deployed on-premise, right? So these work for an individual enterprise. And maybe the management might be in the cloud, but this doesn't really change the data path. So the data path, as you mentioned, is still from the branch to the private enterprise data center.
Mm-hmm. So now I've got my WAN replacement or my WAN modernization, I'm going to have multiple link types, whether it's internet or full mesh of architectures, different ways of running your WAN. We'll talk more about that later. But what you're also recognizing is that a lot of people's data centers are not owned by them. They may actually just be rented or cloud-spaced. And what I mean by that is that you might be in AWS or Google Compute or Azure, where you don't own the servers and you don't even own the MPLS circuit. So you have to be able to have data centers, branches, and then infrastructure you don't own. It's not a colo. And you have a solution for that. So you have the virtual VM type model. And then the final part is you actually have a cloud infrastructure. So I can say, have no central location whatsoever. I can just have SD-WAN appliances that you provide to me on a pay-as-you-go basis.
Correct, right, absolutely. So the key there is the pay-as-you-go. So it's not just us providing a virtual appliance, which you as an enterprise would still have the challenge of where to deploy it and trying to deploy it at not only a couple of additional cloud data centers, but then how do you put that in front of every single SaaS application that you're using. So the key is that we actually have a cloud-delivered network of distributed gateways that you basically take advantage of. So when you're going from the branch, if you're going back to the enterprise data center, We could go through the cloud, and in fact, you don't have any installation in the enterprise data center, or you can go directly to any of the cloud applications and go through the other end of the service at the ideal location for each and every destination in the cloud.
So I'm thinking traditional enterprise, very popular for people to outsource their email, their Exchange mail to Office 365. And so that's on the internet, but you're saying I could now actually use your SD-WAN solution and get a private circuit into Azure and not have it traverse the internet at all.
So the key is it's not necessarily a private circuit per se, but it's basically getting the SD-WAN overlay. Mm-hmm. All right, so with this overlay, which can work over hybrid WAN, so private and public, mm-hmm. or simply over the top with broadband only, we can still, and we'll talk more about this technology later, we can still guarantee the performance, availability, security, manageability, whether you're going to a private destination or, more importantly, if you're going to a cloud destination.
And because so it's very normally you when you're in Azure or Google Compute, you've got no way of measuring the WAN performance or to know how well the internet, if you like, you know, the public network or the internet, you just can't measure performance over that unless you do something special in the networking layer.
Right. No, absolutely. So very simply put, it's basically you're getting the traditional managed network from your branch to the data center. So you own both ends. So here, even if you're going to the cloud, the enterprise still has control over the both ends. You have control of the overlay, and this is how you get the performance, security, and the manageability, even if you're going to a destination that's not an on-premise application.
So today I'm buying a 100 meg WAN MPLS circuit, tail circuit into my data center, you know, a gigabit or 10 gigabit. And then my branch out here has got a 100 meg tail circuit, and the carrier's then guaranteeing me, 80 megs of bandwidth from that branch to my data center. You've got some guarantees. You know what it is. It's a pretty dumb sort of a WAN. It doesn't have burstable. It can't go more than 80 megs, but it's guaranteed. You know exactly where you stand. But when you go onto the internet, you can probably, for the price of a 1 gig, you can get a 10 gig internet circuit and have lots of bandwidth, but you've got no visibility or no certainties. And VeloCloud's giving you visibility into that part or giving me options around how I manage that public bandwidth.
Yes, and absolutely. In fact, so let me point out one difference. So other solutions, as they try to go to the cloud destination instead of on-premise, we'll basically do split tunneling. So that's been around, as you know, for a long time. And now the normal enhancement is it's policy-based by application. But with other solutions, the traffic that's routed to the cloud is still best effort. So the distinction that we're making here is because we have the cloud-delivered gateways on the other end, in most cases, co-located with the major cloud data centers, be it Amazon or the major SaaS applications, we can still provide the private network-like performance, availability, manageability, even if you're going to all these distributed destinations. And without the enterprise having to actually buy, own, install, manage all these distributed nodes around the cloud, that's really key to our solution.
All right. So if you're a network architect, you're not having to go into colo one or, try and get 8 colos around the world to run the VMs in so you can build a WAN architecture. VeloCloud has them running with an operational platform. Probably we'll talk more about how that works in a bit, but I don't have to buy that head end. I can just, the branch office connects to the nearest VeloCloud instance. Away I go.
Yes, absolutely. So let me just point out, for the largest enterprises, we also do offer on-premise edges that can be deployed at the enterprise data centers, and basically they're running in something called a data center role. So they can manage their own head ends, if so desired, as an option to using our cloud gateways, or someone can mix and match and use both our cloud gateways for certain destinations. And for some of the more established data centers, they can still use an enterprise located data center head end as well.
Yeah, just to add to some examples here from what Steve is talking about. So if you think about it from a customer perspective, we have several customers who are using Amazon Web Services, for instance. And as you pointed out, the colo facility doesn't need to be always on-prem. It could be somewhere in the cloud. Now, traditional WAN, you have two options. From each and every branch office, you can start connecting to these Amazon locations, which is, of course, very complex to deploy. The other option you have is you take all this traffic back to your DC and you build a single VPN tunnel to your Amazon cloud. But with the VeloCloud offering, it's best of both worlds. All your branch offices automatically connect to the cloud gateways. And from the cloud gateways, we can take you to the Amazon destination. So that way, you don't have performance penalties of backhauling the traffic back to your DC. Yeah. And of course, it is very simple to deploy because now it's just one click addition off the Amazon VPC inside your VPN infrastructure.
So I'm thinking of a network that I once worked on where we actually had to put offices into Asia. And so we had to start connecting up Kuala Lumpur, Taiwan, a whole bunch of countries around there. And we ended up buying a rack in a colo facility in Hong Kong and installing a router and then having a bunch of MPLS circuits in the local region and then one big fat pipe that came back from Hong Kong. Now, with your appliance, you would replace that with the VeloCloud instance in the cloud.
Yeah, so the VeloCloud instance in the cloud could build a standard-based IPsec tunnel to one of these cloud facilities or your colo facilities. And that way, all your branch appliances are already talking to this VeloCloud gateway in the cloud. And the cloud gateway itself can talk to any non-VeloCloud sites. And a non-VeloCloud site could be a site like Amazon. It could be a site like, you know, it's your on-prem appliance. Like you can have a Cisco router, ASA, Palo Alto, you name it. And it can connect back into the VPN infrastructure. So that's the key, again, a key differentiator. As we scope this service out, you can literally start with one or two branch offices. You can deploy VeloCloud at these sites. And you can even have all these legacy routers and a set of non-VeloCloud sites like Amazon connect back into the same VPN. So it all becomes a part of same VPN infrastructure.
So let me add to that. You guys were pointing out a very nice use case. Customer might have a core backbone private network to their Asia-Pac headquarters. But obviously, given the expense of the private network, they can't afford to extend that out to different satellite offices in Asia-Pac. So typically, they would just do a VPN solution over the top of broadband to those smaller offices. They still get the security, but actually they're giving up on the availability, reliability, and also performance over whatever broadband they can get to those little satellite offices. So what we can do is with the cloud gateway as an on-ramp to that private network point, or actually if it's going to a regional hub, we can have an on-premise edge as well, and then we still have the SD-WAN overlay to the satellite offices for the over-the-top, and then we can deliver good performance, manageability, and availability over any selection of broadband, wired, wireless to the satellite offices.
I think you're alluding to something that we haven't really talked about much here yet. Now, a lot of what we've mentioned has been about connectivity. Contextually, we can get you to here, we can connect there, there's gateways in the cloud and so on. But the point of all of this isn't just to, you know, bring everybody together into a common overlay infrastructure. It is really about getting that performance across the internet to actually deliver a LAN-like experience using potentially broadband or what we consider as best effort circuits. Is that fair?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So the right. So we've been alluding to it. We probably should talk about it. So we have something called dynamic multipath optimization. So the key on this is to really deliver the needed application performance, even for demanding applications like voice and video, and do this over not just private networks or hybrid, but even over broadband and LTE networks as well.
Okay, so and actually I want to just pause right there and park on this, because this is a discussion I've been having in the back channel with a number of people. Is SD-WAN as a general technology really an internet solution for it to work, or is it really an overlay on hybrid WAN? How are you seeing customers typically deploy?
I think we are seeing it both ways. Like we are seeing, so let me give you an example of a large enterprise account that we are working with. So they have a set of gold, silver, bronze, different tiers of sites. Now, on their gold sites, they do not want to get rid of the MPLS. They want to keep the MPLS network and still leverage best of both worlds. They'll have an MPLS circuit and they have an internet circuit. Now, they want to offer better WAN utilization. They want to offer better WAN availability on these sites. But whereas there are a set of sites where they see opportunity of reducing cost, which are their current hybrid sites. And the real question is, if I can move some of these hybrid sites, which used to be silver sites, and make them appear like bronze, which is like internet or dual internet, and still maintain the security and performance that was offered by a traditional private WAN, it's a total ROI cost savings for that entire enterprise. So a single enterprise would have hybrid sites, it will have dual internet sites, it's going to have single internet sites. But the expectation is, no matter what the transport is, you should be able to deliver reliable performance and security over those transports.
Okay, so that takes us back then full circle to dynamic multipath optimization. So let's dig into that.
So the dynamic multipath optimization, as soon as you plug in the link, so let's say it doesn't matter, it's a hybrid link or an internet link, we automatically measure those links. We can measure the capacity of the link. We can do link and path quality monitoring. So we can look at the latency, jitter loss, the bandwidth available on those links.
Measuring capacity of the link, you're making no assumptions about how much bandwidth the link might actually have.
That is correct.
You know, because an internet link could be a best effort or as much as kind of a measurement. So you take your own measurement and make an assumption based on that measurement as to what the bandwidth is that you can actually use and go from there.
That is correct. And that's the key differentiator here. Like, I'll give you an example of my home. I took these Verizon LTE modems at my home, and in the nighttime, I used to get 40 megs of available bandwidth. But I wake up in the morning and try to access internet, it goes down to 10 megs. Because, you know, everyone is trying to access in the peak hours, your available bandwidth on those LTE, which is a shared media, goes significantly down. So it is very important to do both capacity monitoring and also measure the link statistics itself. And then based on these monitoring, one of the key aspects I want to highlight about monitoring is we don't want to send extra probes on the network when we monitor the networks because we don't want to add additional bandwidth. So that's, again, a key differentiator. We don't want to have probes being generated to measure these links itself. But once the links are measured, we want to offer higher WAN utilization and higher WAN availability. And when we say higher WAN utilization, we want to aggregate the links together so it appears like one virtual WAN. So it's the aggregate of the two links is available as a full capacity that can be used for those links.
Does that mean you're spreading traffic of a particular flow across multiple links?
That is correct.
Okay, so traditional load balancing in a networking environment, if you've got equal cost multipath or you've got some kind of, typically you take one single TCP flow, it gets hashed to a particular line and off it goes, you persist to that one line. You're actually saying a single flow spread out over two or more available links.
Correct. And it is intelligent load balancing. So you could load balance it across, you know, on a flow by flow basis, but based on the business policy, based on what the network determines, we could do a per packet load balancing as well. And in oftentimes, you know, we found that per packet load balancing really helps in providing better WAN utilization. Now, it goes slightly beyond WAN utilization. It's also about availability of those two links. So based on the link characteristics, we want to make sure that we react to link conditions sub-second. So for an ongoing voice calls, if you use a traditional load balancing, something happens mid-flow, how do I steer these voice calls on a different link? So it's going to be per packet, and also it's going to offer sub-second reaction so that the application performance remains intact.
Okay, right? Now you said you're taking measurements but not using probes. So how are you pulling off a sub-second reaction to changing WAN condition if you're not actually doing a probe?
We have our proprietary overlay header that we add, and as a part of that overlay header, we have information, we measure the network characteristics, and we can react with that. So we don't need to have extra probes for the network.
You end up using live traffic as your probe, essentially.
Correct.
Correct.
Absolutely.
And I think a key to point out is it's really performance-based steering of the apps over the links. So it's not just simple load balancing. So if I have two links, if one link has better performance characteristics, like a lower packet loss, lower jitter latency, and we have a critical voice application, then we may, for that period of time, steer the voice solely over the better link and not actually spread the load because we want to use the best link. But during that phone call, mid-session, if there is a glitch on that link, then we might pop the next few packets over to the other link to ensure that the voice is working well. So it really is a performance-based steering as opposed to just trying to balance the load across multiple links.
I'm assuming in this kind of a scenario, you can deal with out-of-order packets. That's going to happen to you once in a while, but it's the VeloCloud appliance that sorts that out?
Correct. Yep. We have our own sequencing engine, so VeloCloud will figure that out and we'll sort that out. And one thing to add is, you know, because of this unique way we do this, like we have this per packet, we have this, you know, flow by flow, we have all these options available. This is very unique to other, you know, compared to other SD-WAN solutions that you have heard of. In fact, what Steve was alluding in the beginning, we can have MPLS and internet, but we can have internet-only sites that we can optimize. We can have dual internet sites that we can optimize. So really, there is a lot more flexibility in how we can deliver this application performance to these different site types. That's one. And then there is also flexibility into the different destinations, because one of our customers uses Microsoft Link, and Microsoft Link is in the cloud. Now, there are two options. You can either backhaul all the traffic, and of course, which impacts the latency, it adds to the performance penalties. But the other option is you can split tunnel, but then you lose the performance optimization to Microsoft Link. So now the customer started using VeloCloud gateways for the SaaS applications like Microsoft Link, and this port packet steering is going to help you optimize those kind of applications as well.
So I want to take a step back for a minute here. I want to take all this technology that we've been talking about, and let's do sort of a packet walk scenario. So let's say I'm at my headquarters office. I've got a VeloCloud appliance. I've got multiple paths, internet paths that I can choose to get to some application that's in the cloud. You know, walk me through this. My WAN transaction is heading out towards, let's say it's an office, Office 365. We brought that up as an example before. Let's talk through this. So my client comes up. It's on the wire. It's heading out towards the cloud. It hits the VeloCloud appliance. And then what happens?
Sure. Let me take a step back here. First thing I want to mention is, as soon as this edge is drop shipped to the customer site, the customer brings up the edge. And as soon as the edge comes up, it multi-homes to various gateways. So it's going to multi-home. It doesn't talk to one peer. It's going to talk to multiple peers. And these peers are going to be based on the business policy. So when I say business policy, which means the edge will build a tunnel to overlay tunnel to a data center edge, which is what you mentioned, because some of the apps are in the data center. The same edge is also going to build multiple tunnels to a set of distributed cloud gateways. And this is going to help the edge to get to various destinations in the most optimal way. So now, to your point, when the packet comes in, we look up the destination. Now, destination could be based on the application itself, or it's going to be based on the subnet itself. Now, based on the destination, we will route the packet. We'll look at the link conditions. We'll use the right link, and we'll use the right destination for that particular packet. So in your use case, the enterprise apps, of course, need to go back to the DC. So we'll use the end-to-end overlay tunnel back to the DC. Now, if the same packet was destined for Amazon Web Services, it's going to take a cloud gateway that is linked with your Amazon Web Services, because you already pre-established AWS IPsec connection from the cloud gateway to the AWS. And then the same edge, if the packet was for Microsoft Link, it can go from the edge to another cloud gateway, which is most optimal for Microsoft Link. This whole concept of multi-homing, the edge can take different cloud gateways, on-prem edges for different destinations.
Now, you said route, which is kind of an interesting term in this context. When most of us think of routing, we're thinking of a dynamic routing protocol that, you know, the neighbors find each other and exchange routes that they know about and through some computation determine a best path through the network. But here, what are we really talking about when you say route?
So just two aspects to routing, right? So we've heard mixed reviews about different extremes about routing. There are vendors who say no routing needed. There's vendors that everything is based on routing. What we are taking is best of both worlds. We don't think that routing is going away anywhere, because really on the LAN side of the story, we still want to integrate with a legacy infrastructure. And legacy infrastructure, that could be Cisco routers, Arista switches, who knows? There are a lot of infrastructure out there. And we want to really suck up all this addressing information and send it to the controller. So from a LAN perspective, we do want to continue supporting standard routing protocols. But now, as far as the WAN overlay is considered, we don't use standard-based routing. And that's because we want to offer this per packet dynamic steering based on the link conditions, which is not a part of any standard routing protocol. And it still needs to be per packet, and it needs to react to subsecond. So all these conditions that come out, we had to build our own overlay protocol. And that's what helps us deliver this optimal performance.
But you also know I don't have to throw out my existing investment. So in terms of, you know, if I've got an existing MPLS backbone, I put your gear on, I don't have to replace my routers or change my circuits to start deploying your solution and rolling it out. I guess, you know, if I'm thinking about how the overlay works and whatever, I can start to replace my MPLS circuits later or change them or decrease them or increase whatever needed to be done or pull the routers out if that makes sense for my company, but I don't have to change everything just to make your solution fit in.
Absolutely. In fact, if you see some of the hybrid deployments that we see out there, customers want to use VeloCloud Edge and enable an internet overlay. So it's in a hybrid site, which has an MPLS connection and an internet connection. They use us on the internet side of the story. Initially, they say, you know what? Let me continue to run my voice on MPLS, and I'm going to transfer all the high bandwidth applications like video, VDI, back to VeloCloud. So they offload select traffic to the VeloCloud Edge, and we run OSPF between the MPLS router or the switch and our box, so it helps in the convergence. So if you know MPLS goes down, all the traffic can fall back to the internet overlay. If the internet goes down, then it can all fall back to the MPLS path. Now, the customer has two things at that point of time. Once we prove that the internet overlay works, some customers say that, now let me include MPLS as a part of that whole bundle or as a part of the overlay. But on the other extreme, we have seen a lot of customers say, why do I need my MPLS? You know, let me retire my MPLS 2 years down when my contract expires and start moving even my voice traffic on the internet overlay. So from a hybrid perspective, we have seen customers starting the internet overlay path, and then they can have either of the extreme. They'll include MPLS in the bundle till the time contract expires, or they can completely eliminate MPLS and this and just stick to the internet overlay option.
If I wanted to roll this out and do a pilot and prove the success of it, I can put this onto my existing stuff. You've got the VeloCloud instances in the cloud. I can connect into my AWS instance. I don't have to change the universe just to make this work, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely right. So the so pilot is very easy. So you can roll this out in a single branch because no expensive head-end or data center installation is required because you use the gateways in the cloud. You can be off and running just with a single device in a single branch. We can sit alongside your existing router, as Parag said, and just attract the traffic that you want to put over the SD-WAN overlay. You can start with a little bit of traffic. You can then run all the traffic over that. You can keep your private circuits. You can add internet circuits. So we can put the overlay both over one or more circuits. But just point out, one of the key differentiations is the we focus on making the app perform independent of the transport. So we don't assume, for example, that the private network is the best link. Parag mentioned we're actually measuring all the circuits. So even for critical apps, we will leverage all the links as opposed to statically putting critical apps on the private and then the less critical on the public. We will use the best links available, which increases the utilization of the links. And in fact, if you have failures or glitches, even on the private side, we can move away from that. So a much more dynamic approach to using any of the resources that you put in our overlay tunnel.
We've been talking about an enterprise context here, really, but you guys have a service provider use case too, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And just reminds me, I really liked your intro, still does nothing for SDN. Because that's what happened with one of the service providers that we are working with. And really what ended up happening is there's a large SP that we are in production deployment with, and they are a huge provider, one of the largest provider of hosted voice, and they also offer IP MPLS circuits or IP VPN circuits to their customers. But really the challenge they run into is a lot of times this MPLS circuit is not from them. They still offer the hosted voice. The MPLS circuit comes from another provider, and the SP is saying, oh, but the voice quality wasn't guaranteed, and it leads to poor customer satisfaction. So customer is still blaming the hosted UC provider in this case for a poor voice guarantee due to, you know, SLAs that were not met by some other provider. And the SP reached out to us and said, hey, we have a large retail site, and the problem on that side was the T1 MPLS was delivering 97% SLAs. It wasn't at 99 or whatever the promise rate was. And this had been going on for a while. And they already knew about SD-WAN in a way, and they thought SDN still does nothing applies to them, because what they did was they added a Comcast circuit. They said, oh, now I have a T1 MPLS and I have a Comcast. And let me go into this enable, you know, some of the legacy equipments have also been claiming SD-WAN deployments. Let me just turn on performance-based routing on some of these legacy equipments, because now I have an internet link and I have an MPLS link. And sure enough, the voice still didn't work. And the reason was the Comcast had jitter issues on the links, and at the same time, the MPLS link was having packet loss issues. So if both links have issues, where do you go, right? Simple steering is not going to help you.
Two things there. One is, you didn't have the visibility to know that those providers, like your typical routing protocol or your router that just forwards packets, doesn't have any visibility into the packet flow to tell you that there's substantial packet loss, 1%, 2%, 3%. That's a real critical issue, isn't it?
That is. That's absolutely correct. And in this particular case, the service provider already knew about software-defined WAN and the promises that software-defined WAN is making. And he said, you know, let me just add internet link. They added a Comcast link on site on the retail store. They already have an MPLS link out there. Both circuits are not owned by the hosted voice provider, and they expect that this this new SDN overlay solution is going to offer them the right SLAs for voice. And what ends up happening is Comcast has a lot of jitter on the link, and at the same time, MPLS is suffering with a lot of packet loss. So even if there was a flow by flow, even if the you know the link conditions, and if there was a flow aware, steering, both links are bad. What do you do? So and that's why the customer had an impression that even SD-WAN still does nothing. Yeah. And the SP reaches out to us, and we have this concept of link remediation, wherein if both links are bad, we can still remediate the error conditions because we can enable forward error correction, we can enable on-demand jitter buffering. So all these enhancements that we offer, the customer put us on the retail site. And this retail sites, we are talking about 5,000 plus sites. So we are in production in one of the retail sites where we showed that the value of SDN, SD-WAN, you can even remediate the link condition. And again, this is another way how we differentiate with other SD-WAN providers out there.
And I think it's important to understand this. SD-WAN edge points or branch or devices in an SD-WAN in the overlay are far more capable in terms of features. And there's a whole bunch of questions around functionality and stuff like that that probably can't get into today. But, you've got to monitor the packets going through at an application level to decide, I'm going to send my link traffic down this link. I'm going to send my video traffic over the internet over here. Oh, hang on, the internet's degrading. Is there other circuit? You can't just say, look at the IP address and send it one way, and that's always the answer. You need to dynamically reapportion bandwidth allocations on the flow, and you can do that because of the overlay functionality that you're using. And because you're doing that, you're already calculating things like packet loss, jitter variation, circuits variation over time. Your algorithms will actually expose that as a visibility tool, which is not something that most people have been able to do today.
Right. You're absolutely right. So for both the enterprises as well as provider customers that Parag was mentioning, just that visibility on the link performance from different providers, different paths through the internet. In fact, both on the private and public links is extremely valuable in itself.
Yeah.
Some customers said, hey, we're going to go back with this to renegotiate our contract.
I mean, I could,
do our vendor selection as well.
Yeah, keeping the service providers honest is kind of a very difficult job to do, so having that would be great. But the second thing, too, is that if you're having bad performance to, say, Office 365, how can you tell? And if I'm going through VeloCloud, so I'd come out through my Edge appliance, my VeloCloud appliance on my site, it goes off to the cloud end-to-end, and you can actually tell me whether the performance to Azure is good as well?
Oh, correct. No, absolutely. So any of the cloud destinations. So I think this is the on-ramp to the cloud use case that is really of interest to the service provider partners. So basically the fundamental problem that they're trying to address is their performance, availability, security, and then the visibility, as you mentioned, begins only at their provider edge, right? So they don't normally have control over the PPE configuration, the last mile, particularly if the last mile is broadband or third-party private circuits. So what we really do with this footprint in the branch, so we have a control point, visibility point at both ends, we can provide this visibility, as well as the active traffic steering and remediation that we've
mentioned. I've got this vision of these service providers telling other service providers that their circuits aren't meeting their service levels as well. That could be quite fun. So if you bought this VeloCloud solution, if I was a service provider delivering a VeloCloud solution, and all of a sudden you can see that all the circuits aren't performing to the level that was specified, there's going to be a lot of hurt in the service provider world.
That was very interesting stuff out there. In fact, because we have this visibility, we've been publishing this what we call this quarterly internet quality report. In fact, we call it internet quality, but actually extend to private circuits. But just from our cloud orchestration, we're collecting right from over 90 cities so far, I think over 130 service providers, the information on the quality, so the performance, availability, packet loss, jitter, latency across all these things. Obviously, we're at this point, we're anonymizing it, but we're actually showing the performance of different types of links, different providers, and obviously our enterprise customers will find that extremely useful in helping them select what circuits and providers that they go with in different cities. So lots of value in that on its own.
I want to go back to a point that we were chatting about earlier. With all of the data, with all of the visibility, you have knowledge when two lines are lousy quality. But then we very quickly touched on it, but you can do things like forward error correction to help deliver a quality experience, even though both lines are lousy. Can we talk about some of the mechanics of what that is?
Sure. Let me have Parag discuss that, but let me point out on this quality report, we've proven in real-world data, right? So if we're just using the broadband links with these issues, our results so far show about 70% of the time, you could not get the quality voice video across these links. It doesn't matter even if you have multiple links, because traditional technology can't move a voice call from one link to another, as each link has glitches. But with our overlay, that allows you to do the per packet steering onto the link that's performing the best at that moment in time, we can still deliver a 99% plus quality. And that is a result of the what we call the dynamic multipath optimization that we have.
Yeah, just to add Steve's point, so one thing I want to clarify on forward error correction, which is really unique here, we can offer forward error correction, of course, on dual links, wherein both links are bad and we can improve the quality. But even if there was issues on a single link, all the error remediations that I spoke about, which is forward error correction, jitter buffering, all those things still apply. So we can improve both dual link scenarios and single link scenarios in that particular instance. And of course, if you have dual link scenarios, you have much more diversity, and we can make applications work. In real world, we have seen with dual links and the forward error correction, we can remediate up to 9% packet loss. Single link scenarios, we can help up to 5 to 6%, and which is really good for most of the sites that we are seeing these days.
So forward error correction is what then? I think I've talked about this with you guys before offline, and if I remember right, it gives you the ability to figure out what the missing chunk of data was supposed to be.
That is correct. So we can replicate the packet. So as you know, we are measuring the link conditions, and when we see that the link conditions are bad on both the links, we can replicate the same packet twice on both the links. And because we build our own sequencing engine, it's almost like think of it like a race condition between the two packets. Whichever packet comes first on the gateway side or on the data center edge side, we can accept that and we can ignore the next packet that's coming in. So that way we can really remediate the issues. The probability that both packets don't arrive on that next on the other side is really low, and we leverage that to our benefit.
Very good. Okay. So we've talked a bit about how service providers can take advantage of VeloCloud, but we didn't really get to an overall architecture. I mean, does it look a lot different from the enterprise architecture we were describing? What does a service provider architecture with VeloCloud look like?
So let me start off on that one. As we talked about the cloud delivered SD-WAN, that was important for two key reasons. One was to address the shift of computing to the cloud, but actually by delivering the solution in the cloud, this really also enables service providers to deliver the SD-WAN as a service. So initially, cloud gateways, we have VeloCloud-hosted gateways, but we will also sell these gateways as well as the orchestrator as either services or software to our provider partners, so they can build their own SD-WAN services to their customers. And the key services that we see for the provider is to provide this unified elastic transport. So really provide this overlay tunnel to allow flexibility of any transport, whether it's private, to easily augment their MPLS with internet to add more economical bandwidth to their offerings and compete with other providers, as well as address the enterprise demand for more bandwidth. The other key one is if they have services they want to deliver from the cloud, to provide a managed on-ramp from the enterprise site, typically an enterprise branch site, but to provide a controlled, managed, secure on-ramp to the services that the providers want to provide from central cloud POP locations. And so those are the key applications for the service provider.
You know, just taking a step back here, I mean, a lot of these SPs, of course, they have two common goals that we have seen. One of the things they come out, so it was interesting conversations with some of the service providers. They said, hey, we think that even SD-WAN is actually competing with what we offer today, which is MPLS. And we had to take a step back and explain to them that, hey, SD-WAN as a service is actually enabling you as the revenues for you. And it's also making sure that you have a much better competitive edge versus the other commodity providers out there. So that way, you know, we want to make sure that SD-WAN as a service is a revenue-generating service for some of these SPs. And really, the way you generate revenue is by offering higher WAN utilization, by offering that higher WAN availability. You can make sure that not only you are offering the right SLAs to your customer, so that way you're not losing revenue and returning credits back to the customer, but also the customer is happy in terms of the kind of availability he's getting. And like Steve covered this already, which is direct access to the cloud. We've seen a lot of demand in this whole hosted UC space, cloud web security space, wherein these service providers or cloud service providers want to take our cloud gateways and they want to host it themselves. And they have really two purposes of doing that. One is policy-based redirect, which means a security vendor or a cloud security vendor cares really more about the HTTP traffic, HTTPS traffic, whereas a hosted UC provider cares about optimal delivery of the voice packet. So based on these different needs, how do we do a policy-based redirect so that interesting traffic is sent to the cloud and rest can be handed off wherever it needs to be handed off? That's one. And then the second is, once we deliver all that traffic to the cloud, how can I deliver optimal performance for those traffic types? So there is this whole direct access to the cloud wherein these cloud service providers are trying to differentiate from the other vendors out there in their space by offering a much better performance to their cloud service.
All right. So as Parag said, the obstacle we've seen these providers have in convincing enterprises to shift what was normally an on-premise service to the cloud POP is how to get the traffic over there easily. So that's the policy-based redirection based on the particular application. And then basically, is the connection as good as if that security device was on my LAN? That's where they want the guarantee of performance and security as well. Mm. So the SD-WAN overlay provides both of those. It simplifies the redirection, and it also provides the private-like circuit connection to the cloud POP that gives them the confidence that says, okay, I'm going to trust. I can move my security services. I can move my WAN optimization. I can move my video conferencing up to the provider's cloud POP.
And just to add to one more thing on Steve's, Steve touched really briefly on the Unified Elastic Transport. And one thing on the Unified Elastic Transport, there are a couple of aspects here. We're seeing Tier 1 SPs, some of the Tier 2s coming up and saying, hey, what do you do for universal CPE? Do you have a virtual version of your edge? So that's, again, the branch footprint flexibility. So we do have a virtual edge, which can run on standard x86 platform. So that offers them, okay, you can have an appliance from us, a branch box, or you can have a virtual instance of our edge running on any commodity hardware. And in addition to that, one interesting challenge that they brought up is, hey, when I run, these guys provide MPLS circuits and internet circuits. They want to monetize out of both and offer high availability, you know, monetize out of that aspect. And they're like, if I offer an end-to-end overlay across my MPLS, don't I lose my class of service on the MPLS because now you're building an overlay tunnel on it? And what some of these SPs have started doing is they use our cloud gateways in their MPLS core, and we can talk with the provider edge router, their existing provider edge routers like Cisco. And this is in production with one of the service providers that I just touched base on. And really, the cloud gateway is accessible both through the MPLS path and internet path. And they don't lose the class of service by building an overlay tunnel from a site to another site, because the packet, of course, the overlay terminates on the cloud gateway in the MPLS core, and then they can still get the MPLS class of service across that.
I just want to jump in here. I want to take, you said something about security here. Am I right in assuming, and now I know a little bit about software-defined WAN and how you're using the overlay, and then you have the application recognition at the edge. Are you able to then create increased security by that recognition and permissions and then isolating traffic into different overlay networks? Is that the security case you're talking about, or is there more to that?
So I think what you're referring to is so on the branch footprint, again, whether it's the appliance or the virtual VNF, so we do deep packet inspection. And so we're going to identify by application, category, sub-app, what the traffic is, and really very simply apply the right security policy. So a very good use case is if I have a mix of traffic, for example, three different web streams for webmail. If I'm worried about DLP, we can easily redirect it to an enterprise regional data center where they want to do on-premise inspection for intellectual property. We can get that over there. But for other web traffic, we can send it to a partner, an enterprise partner's cloud web security service to do the malware scrubbing. And then for other traffic that's going to trusted destinations, be it at their own private cloud site, we can let that go directly without any on-premise or cloud scrubbing. But we can really fine-tune exactly what security services to apply to which application streams.
So that's network service insertion. So what we do in a DMZ today is normally the WAN comes back to the data center, then it loops you around out to the DMZ, and in the DMZ is a proxy server with an ICAP and a malware scanning engine. There's mail gateways doing all the mail scanning. You know, that's those network services are then injected into the network. They're transparently either layer 4 redirection or WCCP or, you know, explicit proxying through mail gateways, whatever it is. But what you're saying is you can dynamically insert these into the service. So you're enhancing the security policy right from the edge. You're saying, and tell me if I'm getting this wrong here because I could easily do this. I seeing Gmail, all of a sudden I'm saying, oh, hang on, he's logging into a company Gmail account. I need to send that down to head office and out through the mail gateway. But I see some personal, maybe some Facebook mail or something like that, and you say that goes straight out to the internet. That doesn't need to be scanned. Is that the sort of separation?
Yes, absolutely. So now there's no longer any trade-off between security and performance, right? So I don't have to backhaul traffic to the enterprise data center to make sure it's secure. I can secure it, but also send it directly out to cloud destinations, yet still get the services inserted either at the branch or in the distributed cloud security points. But if you want to take some traffic back to corporate security devices, you can do that as well to segment the traffic and apply all the different security policies.
Yeah, I'm thinking guest Wi-Fi, for example. We've always run that through the security infrastructure, but then the cost of supporting all the guest traffic meant that it was going through the scanners, you know, the email gateway, all that. It was just like cost a fortune. Right. Just to provide guest, you know, because there was only one way out of the network. So this gives me some flexibility. And I guess also I could actually start to do network services dynamically. So if I could get a virtual instance and say the branch office went from 500 staff to 1,000 staff over a year, I could then just create a VNF on site to do the mail scanning and then divert into that just as easy?
Right. No, absolutely. That's one of the functions that we didn't talk much about. So in addition to our edge being deployed by service providers as a VNF or virtual network function, we are offering support for virtual services even on our branch CPE. So this will be made available on a selective basis for critical functions that we believe should be deployed at the branch, and also for partners, either technology or SP partners, who want to put certain services at the branch as well as distributed to the cloud.
So we've got a lot of business value. We've got a lot of technical value here. So let's say I'm pretty keen on VeloCloud. I'm interested in trying this thing out. What would it take to roll this into my network? What's a deployment process look like?
So the deployment process is very simple, right? So basically, you can start a deployment at a single branch. So you would get the appropriate CPE for that branch. Plus, you would have the orchestrator, which is the traditional configuration management, as well as the data plane orchestration that's hosted by us in the cloud. And you would have access to all of our distributed cloud gateways, whether you're going to a cloud data center, a SaaS app, or back to an enterprise data center. So the administrator would simply log on to his secure private portal, set up policies, and the policies all are business level. So basically, by application, just prioritize applications, what's critical, what's less critical, what services he would like to insert security services to different application flows. And then basically, this would be a group profile, which would apply to one or more edges. He can basically drop ship an edge to a remote branch, doesn't need to have any IT person at that remote site. It'd be a very simple activation key that's sent out by email. A non-IT person can actually just connect that edge to any links that are available. Doesn't need to know the speed or performance of the links. Just plug them into the ports. The edge will automatically discover one or more of those links, all the characteristics. The edge will receive the policy push from the cloud-based orchestrator. Right now, it will know which gateways that edge will connect to for the different applications, and it will be automatically doing the dynamic multipath link characterization and be ready to just send any of the application flows to their different destinations, but with the performance and security guarantees of the overlay tunnel. So really, really as simple as that.
Now, if I want to phase this in, I mean, do I use policy-based routing to send traffic to a VeloCloud node? What's the process there?
So in the branches, several deployment models. So in a very simple branch, the device could be installed in line, or in a larger branch, if there's existing layer 3 switches, routers, we can use routing just to attract the traffic that the enterprise wants to send on the overlay, right? So for pilot, it could be a portion of the traffic.
So OSPF just announce routes that I can handle in the the SD-WAN overlay, that kind
of
thing?
Correct. Okay. So you can either, at the layer 3 switch, send the traffic or let us actually announce and selectively pull the traffic. If we have all the traffic coming to our edge, the advantage is we do application-aware traffic forwarding, so we can even send it from our edge back to the private network. We can even send traffic back and exclude it from the overlay. But the advantage, then you get a full business policy app-aware decision-making on where to send what traffic. But basically very, very flexible deployment options.
And if I'm a service provider, it's really kind of a different problem I'm solving, and I'm probably going to want to automate this, program this in some way, right? Do those guys handle it differently?
Well, service providers typically run into two issues to reduce their operational costs. They want to reduce the truck rolls because as they enable new services, really they don't want to, you know, ship more appliances because there's a complex chain of appliances that need to be managed. So really they want to reduce their truck roll. And then B, they want to really reduce their, simplify their service, and they want to reduce their operational cost with that. So with this whole concept that we spoke about, you can use us as a virtual edge, or you can run multiple services on our edge itself. They can really reduce their operations cost both ways. So but it's the whole concept of universal CPE, and that's going to help them reduce the truck rolls. And at the same time, it's more revenue generating for them because now they, with a simple click, you don't need to configure a bunch of hundreds of lines of PBR rules. You know, they can insert services in the branch. They can insert services like Zscaler or WebSense in the cloud, or they can insert services on-prem. So it's really meant to offer them a whole service provider whole offering, which is going to help them with the SD-WAN automation, is going to help them reduce their cost.
Now, is that going to integrate with my orchestration platform as well? Maybe it's OpenStack, maybe it's, I don't know, OpenDaylight, some sort of an SDN controller. Do you plug into those sorts of things?
Correct. And most of the time, these SPs, they ask us whether it's, you know, REST API driven, because they have their management platforms that they are using. They either want SNMP support or they want REST API support. So every single thing that we do on VeloCloud, starting from configuration, monitoring, visibility, is REST API driven. And most of the SPs are tying into these REST APIs.
Okay. So again, if they've, no doubt the SP has an orchestration platform and they can leverage REST APIs to integrate VeloCloud service offerings into their larger service portfolio offering and again, automate those service spin-ups and spin-downs.
Absolutely.
Well, I think we are at the end of another Packet Pushers podcast. Mr. Farrell, what do you think about all that?
You know how I feel about SD-WAN and getting rid of those private WAN circuits and partnering with service providers who can barely run their own networks, much less provide you with something of value.
You're being kind and considerate again, I see.
Yes, well, this is a sponsored show and one has to be, you know, respectful. But I think I've made my opinion clear that service providers are often unable to deliver on the promises they make, but we equally as networking professionals haven't necessarily been able to measure what they can give us. And part of this visibility about what VeloCloud's giving us is not just the ability to measure private WAN circuits with that deep inspection, and because they have to do the traffic flows and the application, they're automatically giving you a monitoring tool as much as a WAN orchestration piece, as well as the, you know, different, all the other things we've talked about with software-defined WAN, you know, 2, 3, 4 links, load balance across all of them, load balance across all of them at once, or maybe just send some flows down one and not the others. Use an overlay network to create arbitrary meshes that routing protocols, ordinary router protocols, can't create full mesh networks because of the routing. They get loops and then the protocols might fall down. And, you know, the VeloCloud solution is talking about sub-second failover. Our routing protocols, despite our best efforts, are still several seconds to detect a failover and can go into the alternate paths.
Well, it depends on the scenario. I mean, I think what's interesting here with VeloCloud is this is on a per packet, per flow orientation. It isn't, you know, failing over like a simple routing protocol would. It's much more complex and policy driven. So there's a lot more nuance that is going on there.
And it's not done per node. It's scaled up. So you can still see, you know, if you've got up 500 nodes, you don't have 500 policy-based routing configurations per device. And then inside each device, of course, you'd have policy-based routing on 10 different interfaces. And all of a sudden, you've got access lists that, you know, wow.
I always grimace when PBR comes up, because in the bad old days of having to manually key in all of your PBR paragraphs and make it, it's like you just want them small and rare exceptions. You don't want to really have to be doing a lot of work with PBR, because invariably you kind of break stuff. It's nice when that can all be automated to accomplish some goal. Well, Steve, do you have a URL where folks can learn more about the product, or maybe if I want to test drive the product, where can I go?
Yeah, absolutely. So just go to www.velocloud.com. So we have lots of information about our solution, use cases from customers, lots of resources to download, including the Internet Quality Report and other white papers as well.
That's great. And if you want to follow VeloCloud on Twitter, they are at VeloCloud. And if you go on LinkedIn.com and search, they also have a company page there. And thanks once again to our sponsor, VeloCloud, today. So to find this and hundreds of other audio recordings from deep in the heart of the networking industry, you can visit packetpushers.net. Follow the Packet Pushers on Twitter, at Packet Pushers. Email your insights and questions about the show to packetpushers@gmail.com, and we will respond as quickly as time allows. And finally, remember that too much networking would never be enough.